Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά. Βρείτε περισσότερες ενδιαφέρουσες ιστορίες στο sbs.com.au/greek.
Radio SBS, Greek Language Program, dear listeners, Themi Kalos at the microphone with you today. The renowned clinical nutritionist, κλινική διαιτολόγος in Greek, and best-selling author, Sara DiLorenzo, draws inspiration from her Greek-Australian and broader Mediterranean roots, offering over 200 recipes along with a heartfelt family stories. Her new book is titled My Mediterranean Life, Recipes and Stories, and Sara is with us today in the studio to talk about this book. Sara, firstly, thank you very much for making your way to Artamon, to the premises of SBS, and for accepting, of course, our invitation to have this chat.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat all things Mediterranean.
Your book is more than 300 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a challenge to fit all the content in our radio interview, but
yeah,
we will do our best.
Of course.
DiLorenzo sounds more Italian,
mm-hmm,
but your Greek name, if I'm not mistaken, is Kasimatis.
Correct.
I presume of Kithirian background.
And very proud, yes.
What can you tell us initially about your family history?
Okay, so it's very interesting because I was brought up on the North Shore, and I'll sort of talk about my immediate and then I'll sort of work back. And I grew up with my papu living with us, and so even though we grew up on the North Shore, I had a very strong Greek influence in my upbringing. So my dad's Kithirian, and as you know, with Kithirians, we're all very proud to be Kithirian. And my dad has my papu came to Australia, I think when he was he would have been maybe 12 or 13, and came for a better life. He was one of 12,
mm-hmm,
and from Potamos in Kithira, and came came on a boat via Egypt, like to start a new life here, and came here and was incredibly successful. So he started milk bars in places like Swan Hill, and he was a man, my papa was a man who could have been a cardiologist. He was so smart and so creative, but he ended up going into milk bars. And I remember I always used to love his stories, and I remember him telling stories like, because the businesses were incredibly successful, and he said, I could see everyone liked the hamburgers and the chips, so I went and got the best meat and the best produce, and I made the best tasting ones. And my shop, my milk bar was, you know, in Swan Hill back then, and he had a few other ones, were the place where all the Aussies went because they had the best produce. So he worked and he worked. My dad worked in the milk bars. And when my papu had worked 7 days a week, mm-hmm, he went every single day. I think he talked about having 5 hours sleep a night. He went back to get a wife, of course, to Kithira, and he
doing
the right thing. And he then 9 days after meeting my Yaya, brought her back. She was 19. They married in 9 days, as you did then, and brought her back to Australia. And had they had 3 children. My dad is the middle. There was a girl, then my dad, and then another, and then there was the third son, all 4 years apart. But even though there were so many Kithirians here and the community was big and my papu's siblings were here, and there was the culture of the Greeks getting together, and you know what it's like when Greek women get together with their cooking and their gossip and more gossip and Greek coffee. But my Yaya struggled. So she took her children back to Kithira.
Yeah.
So my dad lived a little for about a year when my dad was 6, and she always, you know, her heart was in Greece. It was never really in Australia. But she unfortunately passed away when she was 44, and which was in 1962. So I was born in 1972. So I never met her. But my Greek family there's so many cousins, and I grew up, and there's cousins and cousins and cousins and cousins. So our Christmases were huge. It would be 60 to 100 people. Someone would host. Everyone would bring a.
Very traditional.
Correct. And my mum, who's not Greek, became an honorary Greek. She's more Greek than my dad. She really was part of holding of us as children. She embraced that, and she fell right into even though my parents had to elope because the marriage wasn't accepted because she wasn't
Kithirian.
Yeah.
Or she was not Greek.
No, so they eloped, yeah. Much to everyone's they were madly in love. They met when my dad was 21, she was 17, and they met on a street and they fell madly in love, it was really really hard for her to come into a Greek family, as you know.
Yes.
And so they ended up, they are 76 and 80 now. And I can tell you, Themi, they are more in love today than they were when they were. It is a love story, my parents. And anyway, they eloped and then...
Maybe you can write a book about it.
Yeah, they have a real love story.
Mum and Dad.
I've often said to my dad why, because I'm divorced. I've been divorced for a long time. And it's an interesting thing, like because as Greeks, you know, we eating together was the primary thing we did in our house, our Sunday lunches, which I write about in the book, meal time every night, our interaction, you know, conversation, all dominated my family life. And I often would say to my dad, what is a perfect relationship? Because you've got it. And he said, your mother's my best friend. I've never called her my wife. She's always my girlfriend. And he said, and of course I'm attracted to her. So that combination is made for the perfect marriage, according to him.
A big lesson for many of us.
yeah.
Now, you touched about the traditional Greek family and the cooking. You describe your growing up with Greek and Mediterranean influence as a blessing.
Yeah, I do.
Cooking-wise,
yeah.
How was this a blessing?
So because my yaya passed away, my papu sold up his house in Coogee and he moved in with us. So he lived with us I'm one of four kids. My mum was running around, extracurricular sports, busy mum. My dad's a psychiatrist, working long hours. So papu was always there and he was cooking every day. So as young children, you know, the kitchen was the centre of a huge kitchen. So he would have his day, we'd wake up, he'd put his hat on, he'd get the train into the Castelorizian club, play cards, eat some nuts, do whatever he did, come back. On the way back, he would all...
Castelorizian club in Kingsford?
Correct. Mm-hmm. He would go there and, I imagine, play cards in his hat. And he would, on the way home, he would go and he would buy the best piece of snapper. And of course, the garden, like we're on the North Shore and he turned our garden, you know, as a Greek would. There was an olive tree, a lemon tree, there's all the wild greens and the herbs. And so he was in love. He brought his island passion of food into our home. So I would always just... He loved cooking and loved food. And I used to watch, you know, Australians running around and even people that I'm someone that watch. I observe everything. And he would walk in, you know, and he would have a piece of snapper. And he would talk to me about this snapper that made me think that it was like gold. He would say, this beautiful piece of fish, I got the best one. And he would spend time baking it and hours. Whereas he never ate standing up. Everything was a beautiful meal prepared with such passion. And you'd sit at the table and you would eat together. Whereas, you know, you sort of look around a bit of the Western culture and people are kind of eating a sandwich on the go. And there wasn't the same... Food was more, there wasn't the same love and respect that he had. So food was everything. And so I would watch him and, of course, he would talk all the time. So I used to just sit on the kitchen table and watch Papu cooking. I used to watch everything he was doing. And he, from as a little girl sitting there, I would watch him talk about an artichoke. And he used to get artichokes, he'd chop the bottom off, he would bake them with sea salt up. And then he would sit down with me and we'd have these artichokes and then he would have a little dish of olive oil, beautiful extra virgin olive oil that he got from someone amazing from some, you know, it was not from the supermarket.
Yes.
And then he would say to me, we're going to pull the leaf and we'll dip it in the oil and we eat the leaf. And he would go on about when you got to the heart of the artichoke, this is where the magic was. This is the good stuff, the heart of the artichoke. And I would get drawn into the fantasy of how amazing an artichoke was from his. He would take you on a journey with food. And if I try and get my kids now to eat an artichoke, they'd be like, Mum, that's gross. That's disgusting. I'm not eating that, because they just weren't brought up that way. But I was a little girl thinking that an artichoke was amazing. And that's because of the way he would talk about food. So everything was made from scratch. Everything was made, and I don't know, he just, Papu had a touch. He could make it, he could make. So every Sunday was a big lunch. So the family would get together, he would make a big palafi, which was just amazing. Beautiful. It was divine. And so it was always served. We always had like the wild greens, or the family would sit down and eat. And my dad, Papa would serve it like steaming hot from the pressure cooker, and we'd all burn our mouths as little kids. And my dad used to make us flatten it out, and he would tell us when we were little to eat like a snake around from the sides, because otherwise we'd burn our mouth. But, you know, and then Sunday night was never, because we had the big meal together, it was always just something like a sandwich. He would do a tomato and onion sandwich with pepper, and it would taste magnificent. If someone else made it, like my mum, I love my mum, it just never tasted that good.
I know your dad, Nikos Kasimatis. Mm-hmm. Papu?
Yannis.
I presume he's not alive anymore.
No, he's not. No.
When did he pass away?
He passed, he would have been 1997. Okay. And he had the most beautiful death, if I can say death is beautiful. He was 96. He had an amazing life. He was very blessed. Other than being widowed, he actually retired when he was 36 and could still financially support himself at 96. Hardworking Greek.
I was in the profession by 1996, and now I feel regret that I didn't have the opportunity to meet him. And
he was amazing.
Because he came here before Second World War.
Yes, correct.
And very young, and he probably spoke good English too, because he came at a young age.
He did, yeah, he did. Yeah, his English was very good. Yeah, his English. But my dad's first language, of course, was Greek, because my yaya only spoke Greek.
So I can presume that your grandfather, your papu, was a major, very big influence for your Greek cooking.
Yeah,
undoubtedly.
Yes.
Would I be correct to assume that all these remarks you mentioned inspired you to create this latest book and to share with us some of your family recipes?
Yeah, it was, I think, well, the thing about this book is, and I'm going to just, it was never meant to be. It's an interesting story how I got to write this book, because this is my sixth book. My first four books were all health and weight loss focused and getting to a healthy weight. And then my fifth book was about gut health. And then
fifth book was about?
The gut repair plan. So okay. I talk all about gut health. And it was actually the number one in wellness. And it's on its way to China now. So it's incredibly successful and it's helped so many people. And I love that book. But it's when I was talking with my publisher, they wanted, because the Mediterranean diet has been hailed as the number one diet for years and years and years and in reviews, they said, why don't you do a book called My Mediterranean, a plan in 4 weeks to teach people how to eat Greek food? And I started writing it like that. And then I met with and every time I was writing it, I said, the thing about me, Themi, is I'm the world's worst liar. I can't lie. I've got I just can't. I was brought up by a very religious mother. And I don't have a. There's not one part. I'm a brutally honest person, and I have to be. And as an author, I have to be passionate and love what I'm doing. It's a big thing writing a book. And as I was writing the Mediterranean plan, I was like, it kept on icking me. I was like, no, nah, it's not working. And I went and met with the publisher and I said, this is my, as an author, I think a lot. And what I do is I get my ideas for what I want to write. Then I go and jog for 10 kilometres and process it all. And then I come back and write it. This jogging makes me very creative. Mm-hmm. It's a weird thing, but then I get it all in my head and then I can write. And as I was writing my Mediterranean plan, I realised that who I am today and my Greek upbringing is the reason why I'm a nutritionist. And I realised that I'm a clinical nutritionist because I understand, and I was brought up on beautiful produce, appreciation of produce, foods that support your body. I was brought up with it quite, you know, Monday to Friday, we didn't have a lot of meat because I was brought up Mediterranean. And I realized it was like an epiphany. I was like, my entire Greek upbringing and all of the health benefits associated with it, like eating together as a family, the sense of community, the togetherness, the interaction, the importance, not even the sense of family, the importance of family comes first. How Greeks bond and the culture and this was the foundation of who I am. And then when I was thinking about the recipes and having memories flooding to me about Papu making risogolo and my love of getting the best one with the cream on top, better than my siblings. I wanted to have the better one, so I would pick it and hide it. And I loved and understanding like cinnamon and oregano and appreciation. And then I spoke to the publishers and I said, listen, I can't write a 4-week plan because Greeks are not 4-week people. We are people.
52 weeks.
Yeah. We are passionate. We're alive. We love our food. We love our culture. We love our togetherness. Greeks are, and I feel it whenever I go to Athens and whenever I'm in Kythera, and you land there and you arrive and you walk around the plaka or you can walk and you walk around and you realize like the energy is so different to Australia. The energy and the life and the passion for life as opposed to the passion for work that we have here. And then I just said, look, I've got my, and I said to the publisher, I want to write something about why these recipes are so beautiful, why they're a part of my history and who they and how they've made me the person they are today, because my Greek culture and upbringing that I'm so blessed to have had has taught me appreciation of food and recipes and cooking and delicious.
I don't like complaining, but please convey to your publishers my complaint or our complaint. Mm. How come they didn't approach us for the previous books?
Well, I'm going to bring that up. Yeah.
Your Greek background was not highlighted.
It wasn't high.
Because it's obvious one of the reasons I invited you here was because of your... I mean, if X and X was writing something about a book, possibly even for Mediterranean diet, as SBS Greek, you know, maybe I did not show so much interest. But from the moment they told me Sara Di Lorenzo and she's Greek and I did my search, I said, of course. So thank you for being here.
I'm so honored.
You are prompting me to go and search for your other books and possibly in a future interview, maybe we can have a chat. Because your comments, really, even though, as you can see, I'm a little bit prepared.
Yeah.
But your comments prompt me.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions in my mind, but I want to stick to my script deliberately.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, but maybe in a future
we can interview me as much as you want.
I want to dwell on the family stories because you combine them with some of the recipes you describe.
Mm-hmm.
How do they add to the experience of the book?
Because, the family, when you think about the recipes, like, and the preparation that goes into a recipe, for example, like, the recipes had meanings. That was food, like, when I think about, you know, think about when we would eat lamb, for example, like, we only really had that on a Sunday.
Exactly.
It was not, you know, we would do that on a Sunday. And then, look, I'm going to say, like, funny things, like, and every Saturday we would have fava.
Fava, yeah.
And so we had this every Saturday, and there was a routine with the food. A lot of the weeknight could have been the fish and a Greek salad, but the food has memories associated. The meals bring memory. So you think about eating and you think about sitting there with the Sunday lunch, which was the star meal of the week. Or you could think about a weeknight with just some chops and Greek salad, and then you could when you eat the flavors, you know, you remember things. Like when I would eat and then we would have occasionally rosogolo, which was made, we would all fight over it. But there was, you would eat that, and it just brings back the memories of, it opens up a memory, food. Food is, when the taste buds, there is something about that. And can you understand what I'm saying?
Totally, and I could not agree more, because what you don't know about me is that I spent about 5-6 years of my childhood in a village in Greece, in a northern place.
Mm-hmm.
And as you talk, what comes to my mind is my grandmother.
Correct, see?
You had your papu.
Yeah.
My papu only did, you know, the Easter, the lamb, and et cetera.
Yeah.
But the cooking was the grandmother.
Yeah.
And because I was the youngest grandchild.
You were spent time with her.
Constantly with Yaya. Constantly. I was not going away with Yaya. So everything you say, I can relate, even though I admit I'm not a good cook.
But did she, when she was cooking, would she just chatter away to you?
Of course.
Exactly.
So oh, yes, it was a ritual.
Of course. This is what I grew up with, listening to this constant chatter about...
The center of this interview is you, not me.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the fact that you bring memories to me too, and you take me back to the 70s. Now, my next question, I know it's a bit unjust, but I have to do it. I have to ask, which recipe from the book... holds the most sentimental value for you, and why?
I'm going to say what's on the cover, the snapper. Oh, it's so hard to say. There's so many.
I know. I said it's an unjust question.
I think it is unjust. Because I love snappers so much because of Papu and the way, I don't know. Actually, you know what? I'm going to go with the artichokes.
Artichokes.
Because I just thought they were magic. Even though there's so many. Themi, this is the hardest question. But I think,
Well, all the things that... The things that the listeners have to do is buy the book.
Yeah, they do have to buy the book.
And they will have 300 pages more and see the value of it.
Yeah.
But now that you mentioned artichoke, as you were speaking earlier, and I want to combine this with the fact that you are a clinical nutritionist.
Correct.
Kliniki dietologos in Greek. How best can we convince the younger generations?
To eat an artichoke?
Not only artichoke, but you know what I mean. Products like that, because what you mentioned is that we ate meat generally on a Sunday.
Correct.
The other days were without meat.
Yeah.
Or maybe, occasionally
chops. A little
chops,
bit of fish.
Yeah,
chops, but, definitely
but,
yeah, chops.
But mainly the meat, the lamb was a Sunday dish.
Yeah.
The younger generations, how can they eat artichokes, aginares, or kolokithakia, zucchini, I think you call them, and melitzanes, and all the other good stuff.
Oh, look, I'm hoping that my being the mother of daughters who are like 15, 19, 21, my passion for food has definitely, I think it's observation, it's spreading the message. Instagramming my experiences and my recipes.
I mean, social media.
I just talking to people, like sharing the passion for food and I'm making people understand that these foods have got health benefits and they're full of fiber and they're delicious and antioxidants and longevity and wellness and everything that real whole foods does. It's very hard. When I think about the younger generation and what we're competing against in trying to, and what the younger I know because I've travelled Europe with my beautiful daughters, and the influence of food trends when we were travelling was like, oh, Mum, we're in London. We've got to go to Borough Markets and get strawberries and chocolate. And I said, I can make that at home. It was strawberries and chocolate. But we would just, and so it's very hard when they're very influenced by things like TikTok. It's a passion. I think it's, do you know what? If you believe in what you're saying and you can share a message, people feel it. People feel it. They feel it. And I truly believe that if you talk with something that you're passionate about and you truly believe it, people will feel.
I like that, very optimistic.
Yeah, I'm a complete optimist.
Following on that, in the book, you dwell on the Mediterranean diet,
mm-hmm.
which is, and you will tell me if this is correct or not, which is widely regarded as one of the healthiest.
Mm-hmm.
You spoke just now, but what do you think makes the Mediterranean diet so effective for long-term health?
The Mediterranean diet is incredible and it's balanced. So first of all, if you look at the proper Mediterranean diet and you look at the research, people really noticed in around about 1950, it really came to light then when people were researching and they were realizing people around the Mediterranean in particular were living without cardiovascular disease, without obesity, without type 2 diabetes. So all of a sudden, you're looking at like the Western world going in one direction, and then people were starting to get interested in longevity and understanding about not just lifespan, but health span. So scientists and researchers started looking at the Mediterranean diet, and they're realizing that it can stabilize blood glucose. They realize that it's excellent for gut health, for mental health. It's excellent for, obviously, lowering risk of like things like type 2 diabetes, in particular heart disease, and amazing for our brain as well. So researchers studied it, and it is a diet. It's not even, you can't call it a diet. It's a way of life. I mean, diet really does mean way of life, but in Western terms, we think of a diet as like, you know, A to B. It's not, it's a way of life. And when you look at it, it is, first of all, it's seasonal eating. So Greeks would only really eat what's in season.
Correct.
Because, and when you learn seasonal eating, it's what your body needs at that time of year. If you look at, you know, the root vegetables in winter, we need root vegetables to keep us warm and give us energy in winter. If you think about spring with all of the greens, it makes sense to have a lot of greens which are high fiber, low calorie, low carbohydrate to support our detox pathways coming out of winter. You think of summer, lots of melons and lots of things like cucumber. For hydration, we need to be hydration. Then we need hydration. Then you think of things like avocado in autumn or olives, more olives in autumn. Because they're good to fatten us up to go into winter. So
yes.
Seasonal eat, and then all the citrus in winter to support our immunity. So first of all, seasonal eating is logical. And if you learn to be a seasonal eater, I'm a seasonal eater. And a little tip to know what's in season, it's what's at the front of the supermarket that's on sale and cheap. It's not there because the buyer bought too much and they're trying to get rid of it because the buyer doesn't know what they're doing. It's there because it's locally harvested, it's in season, it's ripe, it's nutrient dense, and of course it's in abundance because it's been harvested when ripe and it's made locally. So first of all, Mediterraneans seasonally eat, so they're honouring what the body needs at the time of the year. Plus, it's very plant-based. Now, a lot of the Mediterranean simply it's not by design that it's an amazing design, it's diet, it's way of life. It's more like by default because they couldn't do a lot of farming because of the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of plants and legumes and beans, and it's basically what they could grow in that environment, which is quite rocky. You think about the Mediterranean. It's not, you don't have big, you can't put a lot of cattle out there.
That's right.
And so that's why meat was scarce. So if you then look at it, like you have a lot of cheeses, everything's homemade from scratch, the breads, Pax Amathia, everything was just made from local produce that was, you know, hasn't been refined. And then you look at like things like dairy. So dairy would only be maybe a couple of times a week. Fish, when they could get it, maybe two, three times a week. But meat was why we as Greeks do meat on a Sunday was because it's for a special occasion, because it was scarce. Not because we didn't like it. We love our souvlaki. We love lamb. We love all that.
But now too much, I think.
Exactly, because it's different now. But back then, that was what we loved. So we had it for special occasions.
I lived an era where we had meat, Christmas,
yeah.
The pork,
mm-hmm.
Easter,
yeah.
The lamb,
yes,
and a rooster on the 15th of August.
Yeah, right.
You know, the Panagias celebration. So 3 times a year, and then you had to wait for someone in the village to get married, and they had the whole village get together, and of course they had meat in abundance.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, a few times a year with meat.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of consumption of beans.
Exactly.
Which they used to call the meat of the poor people.
And it is that, because beans are really high in protein. So if you look at beans, you've got, like, if you look at even, do a comparison, like if you were to look at like 100 grams of meat, you've probably got around 25 grams of protein in there. And if you look at, say, a cup of beans, you'd be looking at around 12 grams of protein. So it is an excellent source of protein. But the reason why it is made, beans are incredible, is because they support the bacteria in our gut. Good bacteria in our gut love feeding off beans, because it's what they love, the fiber in it. What the good bacteria does is it then creates a substance called butyrate, which is, I'm going off on a bit of guts here, but it's a short chain fatty acid. And this is bringing me back to why Mediterranean diets are so incredible. But when you feed the good bacteria in our gut, the byproduct or the bacterial waste is what thickens our gut wall, makes us thick and healthy and beautiful skin and hair, and interacts with everything. So beans and all legumes are really important for feeding good bacteria in our gut. So this is, as I say, by default, not design. Is it? And of course, I can't not say this, olive oil.
Love it, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of research has showed, especially in like Icaria,
yes.
They have like, can have up to, and they have the blue zone where there's like next to no obesity, no cardiovascular disease. They
have one of the highest percentages in longevity, don't they?
Correct. And most of them can have around 6 tablespoons a day of Greek oil, of pure extra virgin olive oil.
Locally. Usually in the salad?
Salad on the table, yes. Yeah, the bread, you know.
Earlier when you were talking about season, what's in season, as we say,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you noticed this. I'm sure you noticed it in Greece when you go there. At the end of the meal, you can ask for a dessert, but also you can ask for fruit that are in season.
Yeah.
Do you find that in Australian restaurants they offer that?
Oh, not really, no.
Me too. And they look at me very oddly. And I said,
no.
I don't want dessert. For reasons that I don't want to say here on the micro. I will say it, I'm diabetic, so I prefer the natural fruit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like to do something sweet at the end of the meal, but I said, what have you got for fruit? Even if it's an apple, per se, they don't offer it. And
no.
I always wondered, why not?
And do you know, have you ever noticed that after a meal you always think, oh, I love something sweet?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because your body's looking for a bit of extra glucose to support digestion. So people wonder why, oh, I just fancy something sweet. And fruit is nature, is sweetness. This is what we should have after a meal. It's logic.
Not risogalo. I love risogalo.
So I love it too. I know.
A bit of both.
Yeah, a bit of both. Moderation.
I was saying to your publicist,
yeah.
The first thing when I got the draft copy of your book,
mm-hmm.
I looked at the risogalo.
Mm.
And I love the way you do it. And I'm going to perfect your instructions.
Oh, it's so good.
Now, were there any specific challenges, Sarah, in translating traditional Mediterranean recipes into a more accessible, let's say, easy-to-make format for your readers?
Absolutely. Well, yes. Of course. So when I started, when I went and saw my mum, who, of course, you know, has everything, all of the Greek family history, and I said, okay, mum, I need Papu's recipe for this, I need Papu's recipe for that. And she said, there's no recipes. And I said, what do you mean?
No book by Papu.
She goes, oh, it was a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of this. And I said, but I need the spanakopita. I need this. And she goes, oh, it's 2 handfuls of this. And I sat down and I just said, mum, I really need you to sit down with me and really think about the recipes. So we rang some relatives, and of course all the relatives have their own. The thing about Greek cooking is the way one person makes
secret
a pastizio, is not the same as the family secrets. So there's all the little so someone's Spanish operator might have more dill or more tasty cheese or more feta or more spinach. Might have some cinnamon in it. You don't know, right? So I had to really sit down and say, look, Mum, think about it. And so we did go through it, and it was hard for the traditional ones. But a lot of the recipes in the book as well, because I share all my family's recipes. I share Papu's recipes, and there is a whole section on family out what I grew up on. And we used to love saying, this is quite funny, I remember my siblings and I would love saying "faki" in front of Papu.
Well, you're speaking to a Greek person, so there's no problem. But I can understand the context.
We would sit there. We would sit
lentils.
There. Yeah, of course. So we would sit there and say, "Papu, we want faki," and it was the only time we thought we could be risky saying this
in front of Papu.
But we were just being cheeky, and of course he loved that. But the book itself has got it's got the family ones, but it's got also the way I twisted as a clinical nutritionist. So I've got the family spanakopita in there, but I've got my one, which is without crust.
And you do that a lot.
I do it a lot.
You say this is the traditional way, and this is the way I interpreted, and my way,
and
something
so,
more modern.
Yeah, so I've got a lot of the recipes are my twist on them. Of the recipes that I would make, and I'd go, like my Paxi mother, I'm made with almond meal and almond flour.
Mm.
So I've done my own.
You modernize it, I can use the term.
Yeah, I have, but I've also made a lot of them super healthy and gluten free. Mm. So when I make risogolo, I use like maple syrup, and I might use brown rice. It doesn't taste like Papu's, which had like cream and white sugar in it. But that's an occasional one. But then I twist it, which it doesn't taste as nice, but it's a twist. Because I, after all, my primary focus is health and being healthy and living my best life and feeling amazing every day. And so I'm kind of like, you can have beautiful Greek food with a little twist on it that makes it a little bit more healthy than some of the... But most of the ingredients in Greek cooking are incredible. I just don't like a lot of pastry and... I don't like white sugar and I don't like white flour. And so I in my own cooking, in my own recipe, so I do a lot of recipe creation. I see things and I have my own way of doing it. My dad will, if ever you meet my dad one day, you'll meet him, I'm sure. I do things my way.
Someone very famous said that. Sarah, how do you hope your readers will connect with your Mediterranean recipes, Greek recipes, beyond just the cooking? How will they connect on a cultural and emotional level? Because you speak with a lot of emotion about this.
So this is interesting, because as someone who's in the media and on TV, and I've never shown who I talk as a clinical nutritionist and a TV personality. I've never shared who I truly am a lot to the public, because it's not been part of my journey so far. So this is the first time I've opened up personal stuff about who I am in my life and shared personal things with my follower and my reader and people who will pick up the book. And what I want to do for the reader is take them on a journey into beautiful stories of a childhood and a time in my life where food plays a role, and that's the Mediterranean way, in understanding like recipe development and creation and history and culture. And food is celebration. Food is a celebration of life. I love food. I love it. And I just hope that I can bring people into a part of my life that is the foundation of who I am, and appreciation of the Greeks, the Greek culture that I'm in love with and I celebrate, and I'm so proud, incredibly proud to be a part of, and take them into a journey where they too can enjoy these recipes and know that they're more than just a recipe. They come from a place of history and love and family, and that's why every recipe's got a little story, so they can read a story and it can sort of play in their mind, and they can create the recipe and know that there is so much more to this experience, which is the Greek way when you think about the Mediterranean and think about Greeks eating together and drinking wine and smashing plates and celebrating and loving life.
When is your book available?
7 days. So the third 7 days from today. So it's 30th of October is my publication. So,
and how can one obtain it?
It's from all leading bookstores. It will be online. It will be everywhere. You would be hard-pressed not to be able to get it. So, yeah, absolutely.
The name of the publisher?
Simon & Schuster.
Okay, and the title of the book, let me see my notes, My Mediterranean Life.
Yes.
Not just cooking, My Mediterranean Life. Recipes and stories. What can I say, Sarah? Many thanks for coming all the way to the studio.
Yes.
I don't know if there's any final remarks you would like to make. All I will say is that I'm very, very pleased to have you here for having conducted this interview. And, of course, I wish you everything, all the best with everything you do, and, of course, every success to this latest book of yours.
Thank you so much for having me. And I have to say, it has been an honour and an absolute pleasure. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you. This journey to me is something so special, so personal, so meaningful. And it's who I am. And it is the base foundation of my life. And I couldn't be more proud.
We look forward to having you again here.
Absolutely. I'm making you stick to that. Thank you for having me.
Κάντε like, μοιραστείτε, σχολιάστε, ακολουθήστε μας στο Facebook, στο SBS Greek.